You are listening to the Talking Information Center. My name is Jean. Today's date is April 8th, and I will be reading from the Providence Journal. A whole civilization will die. President Donald Trump, ahead of his April 7 deadline for Iran to make a deal, issued a stark warning that a wave of expected U.S. military attacks on critical infrastructure would leave the country unable to recover. A whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. I don't want that to happen, but it probably will, Trump wrote in an April 7 social media post. The entire country can be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night, Trump told reporters at the White House on April 6th. Every bridge in Iran will be decimated by 12 o'clock tomorrow night. Every power plant in Iran will be out of business, burning, exploding, and never to be used again. Iran responded by declaring it would no longer hold back from hitting its Gulf neighbor's infrastructure and claimed to have carried out fresh strikes on a ship in the Gulf and Saudi industrial facilities linked to U.S. firms. Hours before Trump's deadline, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said more than 14 million proud Iranians had registered to sacrifice their lives to defend Iran. I, too, have been, am, and will remain devoted to giving my life for Iran, he said in a post on X. Alzira Rahmani, Iran's deputy minister of youth and sports, issued a video message April 7th that was shown on state TV and later posted on an official government social media account calling on all young people, athletes, artists, students, and university students and their professors to form human chains around Iran's power plants. Iranians have formed human chains in the past around nuclear sites at times of heightened tensions with the West. Strikes on Iranian energy and transportation infrastructure would mark a major escalation in the conflict. Experts warn the attacks on civilian infrastructure could be war crimes and could turn Iranian civilians against the United States. Trump has brushed off those concerns. Trump, on April 5th, renewed the ultimatum for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, the waterway used to ship much of the world's oil. Since the United States and Israel launched the war on February 28th, Iran has blocked oil shipments to drive up global fuel costs. Early on April 7th, the average price of a gallon of gas across the United States had reached $4.14, according to AAA. Prices were considerably worse in some places. In California, the average price was $5.93. The average price at the start of the year was $2.82. The president left the door open to a possible 11th-hour deal with Iran to avoid an escalation, saying in his post that a group of officials the United States says it has been negotiating with privately are smarter and less radicalized than their predecessors. As the clock ticked down on April 7th, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the Israeli military struck bridges and railroads in Iran. These actions that I approved alongside the defense minister are not meant to attack the Iranian people, Netanyahu said in a video address. On the contrary, they were meant to weaken and crush the horrifying regime opposing them for 47 years. Netanyahu said the strikes were necessary to degrade the Revolutionary Guard, which he accused of using bridges and trains to transfer weapons materials. In a statement, the Israeli military said it struck 8 bridges in Iran, including several in the cities of Tehran, Karaj, Tabriz, Kashin, and Qom. the United States carried out multiple strikes on Karg Island, according to Rutgers and the Wall Street Journal, citing officials. American forces in March carried out strikes on the island at the site of Iran's main oil export terminal. Meanwhile, a synagogue in Tehran was destroyed overnight by what Iran described as Israeli airstrikes. Footage in Iranian media showed Hebrew texts scattered in the debris. Israel's military had no immediate comment. Iran's Revolutionary Guards said in a statement that Tehran's response to the attacks on its infrastructure would deprive America and its allies in the region of oil and gas for years. America's regional partners should know that up to today, we have shown great restraint for the sake of good neighborliness and have had some consideration in choosing targets for retaliation, it said. But all those considerations have since been removed. The U.S. Embassy in Manama, the capital of Bahrain, warned all government employees and Americans across the Middle Eastern country to shelter in place. U.S. embassies have warned in recent days that Iran may target American university campuses in Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and other U.S. allied countries in the region. Thousands of people across the Middle East have been killed in the war. Tens of thousands of U.S. troops have been deployed to the region, and 13 military members have been killed. In the United States, Trump's threat to dramatically escalate the war in Iran drew strong pushbacks from some on the right, with former GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene suggesting the president should be removed from office. 25th Amendment, not a single bomb has dropped on America. We cannot kill an entire civilization. This is evil and madness. Green, once a close Trump ally who has become an outspoken critic, wrote on social media in response to the post by Trump warning a whole civilization will die tonight. The 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution empowers the vice president and a majority of the cabinet to declare the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office and elevate the vice president to the job. Each Republican who refuses to join us in voting against this wanton war of choice owns every consequence of whatever the hell this is, Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said in a post on X. Two lifetime judgeships accepting applicants. The race is on for prized lifetime seats on the state Supreme and Superior Courts. Governor Dan McKee on April 3rd sent letters to Zachary M. Mandel, the new chairperson of the Judicial Nominating Commission, officially announcing the vacancies created by the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Maureen McKenna Goldberg and the promotion of Superior Court Judge Joseph A. Montalbano to presiding justice of the state's busy trial court. What comes next? The letters, kicked off by the judicial nominating process, overseen by the Judicial Nominating Commission, which was tasked by Rhode Islanders to vet candidates based on merit, not political connections or familial ties. The positions will soon be advertised by the JNC on its website and with a variety of legal groups. Applications will begin rolling in. Applicants who are not publicly identified will fill out a lengthy questionnaire detailing their careers, families, assets, public service, and any past legal brushes. They must also prepare a detailed financial statement and submit federal and state income tax returns. Supporters are encouraged to submit letters of recommendations. The JNC will then pick which applicants, many whose names appear on lists time and time again, will be subject to a public hearing and interview. Mandel said timing has not yet been determined. House Speaker K. Joseph Sikorski had already floated a trial balloon to land a seat on the Supreme Court, leading to speculation about his next moves. And he's picked up support from Attorney General Peter Noronha and a more muted nod from McKee's Democratic rival, Helena Foulkes. Last month, when Attorney General endorsed Foulkes for governor, Noronha said he had no issues with Sikorski's qualifications for the Supreme Court. As momentum builds, State Senator Dawn Ure, Democrat from Newport, has submitted legislation intended to make fixes to the judicial merit selection process that critics claim are overdue. Like it or not, the Trump administration and U.S. Supreme Court have upended long-standing federal legal protections and civil rights. State courts are more important than ever as we are considering numerous pieces of legislation this session to make sure Rhode Islanders are protected, Ure said. Unfortunately, the judicial selection reforms of the 90s have become a shell of their promise, undermined by politics and insider influences. When judges are drawn from political ranks, it creates pressure to follow public opinions and political currents, exactly what courts are supposed to resist. We need impartial arbiters of the law, Ure continued. One bill would require a blind review of applications prior to any interview or public hearing and standardize the process. The applicants would be evaluated based on uniform, job-related criteria adopted in advance and published on the commission's website. The rules would require scoring rubrics to demonstrate that its picks are based on published merit criteria. Another bill would give the state Supreme Court Committee on Racial and Ethnic Fairness, in consultation with the Rhode Island Bar Association and its Committee on Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, the authority to appoint a JNC member in the event that a sitting member has not been replaced within 30 days of the expiration of their term. That measure would also require applicants to disclose their campaign contributions made by or on behalf of the nominee for JNC review. It would also mandate that open JNC meetings be televised and the recording preserved. A third bill would require magistrates appointed by the family court judge chief judge to go through the judicial selection and nomination process. Currently, chief judges can name magistrates outside merit selection, though they remain subject to Senate approval. The bills have been referred to the Senate Committee on the Judiciary. Now playing. The IMAX Theater in Providence just got a major upgrade with a new screen, a new projector, and an updated sound system. The upgrade is the first in a planned series for the movie theater in Providence Place, now owned by Apple Cinemas. The company took over the space from Showcase Cinemas after its lease was up last year. The upgrades in the IMAX theater are twofold. There's the movie side with the screen, speakers, and projector, and the lobby side where the area got a refresh and a new way of getting concessions. For fans looking forward to the July 17th release of Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey, the film will be screened on a 70mm film stock, one of the very few theaters in the country to do so. The reopening of the IMAX theater coincides with Project Hail Mary, the movie set in space starring Ryan Gosling. Why there had been hopes of screening the movie in the 70mm film format, the prints are ordered so far in advance that by the time Apple Cinemas operations director, the IMAX renovation had a firm completion date, it was too late, Apple Cinemas operations director Jessica Robitaille said. It's still really great to be open for Project Hail Mary with the new laser projector, she said. For those who haven't been back since the theater was run by Showcase, there are now 10 to 12 minutes worth of previews before a movie starts, depending on what's playing, down from around 20 minutes. For fans of IMAX movies, the large format with immersive sound, the picture should be a little crisper as the hulking Zeon projector has been replaced with a new laser projector, the newest projection technology. We've done quite a few of these upgrades over past couple of years, 3 to 4 of them, Robital said. The shift to laser, it's always a good picture with IMAX, but this takes it a step further with a new screen and a better and brighter picture. Apple Cinemas also replaced the screen, which had been showing its age, with a new one. With the new laser projection, the crisper image should be noticeable, Robital said. On Reddit, multiple moviegoers wrote they could notice the difference in quality between the old Zeon projector and the new laser projector, along with the new screen. The best way to describe it is we're keeping up with the evolution of the technology, Robital said. IMAX technicians also installed additional speakers. Part of the IMAX brand and experience is immersive sound, but now the theater is up to date with the newest specifications. You don't have to be a sound tech to pick out the details, as it's noticeable enough, she said. This is a different experience. You can tell there's upgraded technology in the mix. Getting the 60-foot-long projector screen into the top floor of the mall was no easy feat. They had to unload it from a truck, bring into the building, set it up on scaffolding, hoist it in the food court, she said. Then they hoisted it up to the top level, opened two walls to bring into the IMAX auditorium, and then laid it across the seats before they hoisted it into place. It was really an incredible process. While the old silver screen was fine, it was beginning to show its age, and the new screen is designed for the new laser projection, she said. The new screen is at least the fourth for the theater. Past new screens involved ramps and helicopters to get them into the building. Why the new screen, additional speakers, and new projector deserve most of the attention. The lobby also received a refresh, with new flooring and a new way to get concessions. Concessions in the IMAX theater are now self-serve. Customers pick out their popcorn buckets, candy, and cups, then bring them to a self-checkout kiosk. They scan their items, pay, and go into the theater. The popcorn and popcorn butter are also self-serve, as they dispense from a large popcorn machine. Sodas are also self-serve. A new type of one dispenser called Freestyle that offers all the sodas via a touchscreen, as well as the various permutations like cherry, cherry vanilla, lemon, lime, orange, and tropical. It's a cool experience that also makes it a lot smoother, Robital said. Only a few movies each year are released on 70mm film stock. In the projection room at the theater, it is clear why, as huge platters are needed to screen the film. The Providence IMAX Theater is one of the few in the country that can screen movies on film, and will be screening The Odyssey in the 70mm prints when it comes out in July. Nolan also had his film, Oppenheimer, released on the film stock. Amazon strikes new agreement with USPS. Amazon, on April 6th, announced it reached a new agreement with the United States Postal Service on package deliveries, and sources said the cash-strapped mail system would retain about 80% of its existing deliveries from its biggest customer. That 20% cut is a dramatically better outcome for the postal agency than the 2/3 or larger reduction that Rutgers reported last month Amazon had threatened. In March, USPS warned it could run out of cash as soon as October, and the risk that Amazon would replace the carrier by expanding its own delivery network or using rivals was an existential peril. Amazon will continue its delivery expansion, but short of growth that would rival the address-by-address reach of USPS, the sources said. Rutgers first reported the deal. USPS has a roughly $80 billion budget, and Amazon represented $6 billion in annual revenue to the agency, according to two people familiar with the business arrangement. We're pleased to have reached a new agreement with USPS that furthers our long-standing partnership and will let us continue supporting our customers and communities together, Amazon said in a statement. USPS did not immediately comment on the announcement. Postmaster General David Steiner told Rutgers in December that USPS delivered about 1.7 billion packages annually for Amazon. Amazon had criticized USPS plans to auction off access to its last-mile delivery network. In April 2025, Amazon said it would spend more than $4 billion to expand its U.S. rural delivery network by the end of 2026. USPS said in March that it was seeking approval for a temporary 8% price hike for priority mail and package deliveries effective April 26 to deal with rising transportation and fuel costs. Steiner said in March hiking the price of a first-class stamp to 95 cents from the current 78 cents would help USPS cut losses. USPS has reported net losses of $118 billion since 2007 as first-class mail, its most profitable product, has fallen to its lowest volume since the late 1960s. AI assists emergency call operators. In one of the last places where a real live person answers the phone immediately, AI is now playing an increasingly important role in helping 911 dispatchers speed police, firefighters, and paramedics to emergencies. The most sophisticated AI systems can listen and interact with callers, and in some cases handle non-emergency calls while staying alert for an actual crisis. Other AI systems can automatically translate languages to make sure every caller gets the help they need immediately. Only in rare circumstances are the AI systems directly answering 911 calls, but are instead more often being used to lighten the high-pressure load on trained dispatchers who are often working in short-staffed operation centers. When someone calls 911, they don't want to end on hold. But how do you do that in this day and age, said Stephen Kennedy, the 911 coordinator for Sumter County in Central Florida, which handles about 80,000 calls annually. For generations, 911 operators have been the backbone of the American Emergency Response Network, answering calls for help and then dispatching and coordinating police and firefighters, SWAT teams, mental health counselors, and animal control officers. Each year, 911 operators nationwide answer about 240 million calls. But those same operators are often also responsible for simultaneously answering non-emergency calls, which significantly outnumber actual emergencies. In New York City, it's the 311 line. In Los Angeles, it's 877-ASK-LAPD. Why, usually not a crisis, people call in to complain about everything from parking problems to barking dogs, fireworks, fender benders, and stolen bikes, missing cats, and abandoned cars. They call to request police reports or an extra patrol in their neighborhood. They ask for help installing car seats or changing smoke detector batteries. Aurelion, one of the companies offering AI assistance to dispatchers, found that 64% of all calls coming into dispatch centers are not actual emergencies, and that 70% of those non-emergency calls can be handled by AI without the need for human participation. In New York City, people called 311 more than 1.3 million times in March alone. Max Keenan, CEO, co-founder of Aurelion, said the emergency dispatchers are expected to handle calls about barking dogs or broken water lines while also standing by to respond to a police shooting or a terrorist attack. Switching between routine calls and emergencies is exhausting, he said. Burnout is common among dispatchers. A 2023 study by the International Academies of Emergency Dispatch found a 25% vacancy rate in dispatch centers nationwide, and Keenan said 80% of new dispatchers quit within 2 years. Aurelion systems are serving about 5 million Americans daily, from Tennessee's Hamilton County in Kalamazoo to Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Grant County, Washington. We try to approach this as, how can we help them spend more time on those emergency calls, Keenan said. Basically, train your 911 operators to be Navy SEALs, and they spend 70% of their time being mall cops. At the National Emergency Number Association, staff are keeping a close eye on how dispatch centers are using AI and how the public is responding, giving publicity about the failings of rush-to-the-market AI systems blamed for hallucinating facts or inexplicably providing incorrect information. Cost is another factor. And I'm afraid I have to stop there as we're out of time. Thank you.